The Guardian.
Hello, this is Guardian Football Weekly. Today, the FA Cup fourth round, Newport holds Spurs, Wigan beat West Ham, and VAR means West Brom's win at Liverpool took just over 7 hours. Cardiff failed to kick Manchester City off the pitch, and Alexis Sanchez is good for Manchester United. Elsewhere, we'll round up Europe, we'll look ahead to the midweek Premier League games, reaction to Simon Burton never drinking a cup of tea, and in about 5 seconds, I'll find out what Lars had for breakfast. Ram writes, is it just me or does Max sound increasingly surprised each week when he says, we have a panel today? It's mainly relief, Ram, I would say. I'm not sure how this would work if it was just me on my own. Hey, Lars.
Hi.
What did you have for breakfast?
So I almost did a bad thing because like last night I was having something that I thought this would be really funny if I had it for breakfast. It would be pod gold.
Oh no, the pod has changed your life.
But I just feel like in this age of, you know, fake news and general distrust of the media, we need to hold ourselves to a very high standard. So I didn't change my food pattern to serve the pod. So the really weird thing I had last night, I did not have this morning. In fact, this morning I had something really boring. I had some Greek yogurt with some honey. It's just normal breakfast.
What was the weird thing that you
wild
had
boar.
Was it just like Asterix? Was it just a wild boar?
It was a fillet of wild boar. Well, we did Big Shop and there was discounted wild boar fillet. And I was like, yeah, you got to have that, haven't you?
This is The Guardian, everybody. Barry Glendening.
Hello.
When did you last have a fillet of wild boar?
I couldn't. My gout would play up if I started feasting on wild boar and port again.
Hey, Paul McInnes.
Hello there.
When did you last eat boar?
I don't think I've ever... I've had him in a sausage, maybe.
Okay.
But I had duck yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, duck ragu.
Duck, boar. See, this is a... It's a gamey... The Game is a different podcast, isn't it? Yes, we can't do that one. Hey, let's start with the FA Cup. We'll start with Newport Spurs. That was sort of the nicest, most fun story I felt of the weekend. Do you agree with me, Barry?
Yeah, it was my favourite match of the weekend. There were quite a few I enjoyed, but this one, you know, had all the everything you want from a cup tie, really, apart from the Newport win. Ultimately, you know, ramshackle kip of a stadium, with the greatest of respect to Newport, of course, but I'm sure their fans would agree by the standards of Wembley, say it is a bit of a dump. Horrible conditions, a bad pitch.
Great name as well, Rodney Parade.
Isn't it? It's brilliant, yes.
One of the best names of a stadium anyway.
And the Spurs players didn't really want to be there, quite a few of them. That's certainly the impression I got. And Newport played outstandingly well. They weren't intimidated by their opposition. They took the game to them. Joss Labadie, the captain, was outstanding and a huge influence to the rest of the troops. And Spurs were shocking in the first half. You know, really, really didn't fancy it one bit, and their defence was poor. Newport should have been more than one goal ahead when Harry Kane eventually got that equaliser that Spurs probably just about deserved.
Lars, do you think it's something that's brilliant about football that we can, you know, we can get into tactics and we can get into analysis? But just the brutal fact of human beings not really wanting it is enough to be such a level. You know, a similar Spurs, not that similar, but Spurs got a 1-1 draw at the Bernabeu a few months ago.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it is nice to have the right winger put the cross in for the goal. Worked at Tesco last year, didn't he? He was playing semi-pro. So that's great.
Former Cambridge winger Robbie Wilmot.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And
Tesco signed him from us. Yeah. It's just a slight worry.
Having a guy who's has that on his CV recently put in a great assist against a team that beat Real Madrid recently. Is excellent. It's brilliant, and it's such a cliche, but it is one of the reasons why we really like the FA Cup. I'd say there's an interesting point to be made about rotating for these games versus using your regular starters, because you could see it as a positive. All right, they picked their usual league side, you got all the big guns out, but there's always a chance the big guns see this as a bit of an inconvenience and this game would rather not be here, as you say. Whereas with Leicester, for instance, when you could put Iheanacho in, he's a bit narked about never being in the team, so he's like super motivated compared to a lot of the Spurs players who, as you say, looked like this was a huge inconvenience to them.
I mean, the Spurs played a sort of mix and match 11, I guess. There were some, you know, there's Foyth, there was Walker Peters
yeah.
And they played Llorente and Kane up top, which is a combination that still hasn't clicked yet. And I think it comes down to, it very much comes down to sort of the message that's sent out by the coach, I think, because there's lots of different versions of sides that were played, Premier League sides, but played in the Cup. Some worked, some didn't. You know, look at Huddersfield, you know, the worst possible result for them after to completely perming their team. I think the one thing I took from this game, well, two things. Spurs can sometimes play with that low intensity in the Premier League, and that's when they've struggled. But usually when they're playing with that low intensity, they're taking their time to work out a team that's massed in defence against them, and this time, you know, Newport were coming at them. Second is Sissoko. That's it, surely. I mean, the guy, he's had his 18 months for the Poch miracle to happen, where you just suddenly improve the guy's condition and ability. But he can't. He's still just not one thing nor the other, and you know, I can't see what it is, the one, even one thing that he can bring to a team that improves it.
I feel really sorry for him. Why? I mean, I know, well, because he's, you know, he's got feelings. I mean, he probably doesn't listen to this, but still, confidence is such a huge thing in football. We've seen him be brilliant. I've said it before. I had to Google during the Euros to check it was him.
But that was that one, I was there, I think, in that stadium against Iceland, where he went on that sort of 75-yard run. And it was cracking, but I might have even been in the semis. Anyway, you know, he's had a moment, but I keep turning up expecting to see it. And to be fair, he's not generally played in that position nowadays. He's expected to sort of be a Wanyama replacement, but his touch still isn't good enough. He just doesn't seem aware, and he doesn't apply his physicality often enough. I mean, it's all been said before, but that was one thing that was just so striking watching that for me.
So, I think another thing, I mean, there were 71 places between the sides in the game, and you have to take your hat off to the Newport County support for creating just this horrible, raucous atmosphere that I would imagine intimidated quite a few of the Spurs players. I noticed as well, it was a sort of classic cup tie thing that for the corner from which Spurs score, I think it was a corner, Trippier put it in, and one of the Newport County subs was warming up near him and desperately trying to put him off, doing star jumps right beside him. It's just all those little things.
Yeah, it's a great story for Newport, who, if we remember, were minutes away from going out of the Football League last year.
They're going to earn at least £700,000 from this replay as well, which for them is huge amount of money.
Yeah, he says, Michael Flynn, the manager, I want to improve the training ground. I'd like a new pitch. We need a new building because the old one caught on fire. He also said, he doesn't really want to go to Wembley because he's unbeaten at Wembley because he beat Wrexham in the playoffs and he's worried about his unbeaten record when Spurs go there. Mark asks this, should Premier League teams hoping to beat one of the top six consider waterlogging their pitch and then running a large plough across it? Forget the high press or deep defending.
I'd like to see Pep Guardiola's face if someone tried it. That would be funny from a neutral's perspective.
Well, you mentioned that game. We might as well. We can move on to Cardiff, Manchester City. Pep was very angry afterwards on Neil Warnock's slightly aggressive tactics from the Cardiff City players. Joe Bennett's terrible tackle on Leroy Sané, to which the German Twitter account said, "Hey Cardiff, just letting you know we have a really important tournament in the summer. Please don't hurt our players." Neil Warnock just said, "Hey, look, this is England. We're going to get a few challenges." I mean, it was Wales,
yeah,
but you know,
he's not even right about where he is.
What did you make of? Is that overstating? Is it? Is it too cliche to say Neil Warnock sent out a team to beat Manchester City up?
I mean, no, I don't think it is. I think it's just striking where we. It's just a reminder of how much football has changed. That this is now seen as being slightly beyond the pale. And I think it's something to do with the fact that Manchester City are so good that we, you know, we enjoy watching them play their free-flowing football, and they don't really have anybody in that side who plays physically as their sort of primary way of playing. And that was definitely a way that Cardiff went about the game. But this sort of stuff would have been standard even, you know, 5, never mind 10 years ago. And now it does feel, you know, the modern, not part of the modern game.
Bennett's tackle on Sané was unacceptable. Brahim Diaz as well, the one that got him sent off. He has since apologised on Twitter and claimed it was mistimed. His apology was, as you would imagine on Twitter, greeted with the kind of magnanimity and graciousness and forgiveness you would expect.
But Guardiola says, look, look, on not protecting players, he says the only thing they have to do is protect the players. Please protect the players, not the Manchester City players, all the players, or it'll happen again.
I'm not sure. I can see his point, but I'm not sure how the ref, who was a Lee Mason,
mm-hmm.
Bennett flew in with the tackle. What? How would Lee Mason giving him a red card protect Sané from whatever injury he could have sustained?
Presumably, he wouldn't be on the pitch to maim someone else, and also other players.
Well, there is that, yes, but
it's the whole idea of prison, I believe.
I think it's the players who have a certain responsibility to behave themselves and not put in those kind of reckless tackles, and this just seems to be the referee getting blamed for yet another thing that is not the referee's fault. It's the fault of the players.
Mm, but if he sends him off, then he's not there.
Yeah, well, he should have sent him off. Mm.
Then he is slightly to blame.
I think he has since said that had he seen it better, he would have sent him off.
The referee said that.
Sorry, did I not overhear you and John Brodkin discussing something about this?
Discussing something about it. We were trying to work out whether there could be retrospective action or not, and basically there can't because he did see it and he did give you a look at it.
Which is a ludicrous rule.
Yes, and I think, you know, I'm going to be writing a piece later on today on this subject, and I think it's going to be largely saying, well, you've got VAR coming in now, which is sort of testing the limits of what it is that we believe should be retrospectively changed. Surely these sorts of fouls are going to come under greater scrutiny now as well.
And it's got to work both ways. The fact you can't appeal a yellow card is also ridiculous.
Yeah, but then, you know, you're also going to end up with every game having about six or seven things retrospectively changed, which is going to then put more pressure on people to do certain things in the game, which is probably going to mean more stoppages, more pauses and stuff. It's a can of worms, mate.
I reckon on the protecting players issue, I don't think Pep was like referring specifically to incidents like this. I mean, the ref can't stop it, as you say, but there is a sort of a tacit approval or even sort of a tacit embrace of thuggery in the English game that's always been there, like you say. And if the referees across the board consistently give red cards for tackles like that, they'd stop happening. And I think that's his point in general.
Do you think it is tacit approval of thuggery exactly, though? I think people appreciate hard players who are tough tackling and courageous. I don't think people necessarily approve of actual thuggery, though. Okay. You know, say the famous Ben Thatcher elbow on Pedro Mendes was roundly criticised. I don't think anyone went, Ben did there.
The definition of what constitutes a brave challenge and what constitutes thuggery, it might be an area where we differ.
Absolutely. And it's also a line which, you know, has to be drawn in the moment by a referee, you know, with only one angle of sight. So,
and also you're, you know, famously Scandinavians are namby-pamby if you look through history.
Of course.
Aren't they? So, yeah.
But we've been there and done that. We've kind of reformed now.
Those Vikings were really soft touch, Max.
They really were, weren't they?
No, we've changed.
That's the point I was trying to make, Barry. Anyway, Wigan beat West Ham 2-0. Will Grigg. Barry, you and I were discussing on the radio how the commentator on Match of the Day did very well not to say Will Grigg is on fire. The commentator is Robin Cowan, and she messaged me on Twitter to say, hi guys, she was listening to the podcast, surprisingly. She was the commentator at Wigan. She said, I've spent most of the day asleep because of the sheer concentration required in trying not to say Will Grigg's on fire. Exhausting. Well done Wigan and well done Will Grigg. Somebody sent a message as well going, the fact that Wigan was 6-4 in this game shows that actually it wasn't such a huge upset.
No, because West Ham have a huge injury list. I think they have
Pedro Obiang, Manuel Lanzini, Marko Arnautovic, Jose Fonte, Mikel Antonio, Declan Rice, Winston Reid, Ed Nielsen Fernandez, Andy Carroll, Andre Ayew, and Diafra Sakho all out.
And I don't think they were that fussed about winning the game. Wigan thoroughly deserves their win. West Ham are now going to be without Arthur Masuaka, probably for six games after he was sent off for spitting.
Mm-hmm. He's apologised, hasn't he? And he said, look, it's very out of character. It's his first red card. Obviously, all ex-footballers say this is the lowest of the low.
I thought he almost didn't quite. I think he didn't. It wasn't like he didn't go. He wasn't. He spat and he was angry, but I didn't think he was actually directly trying to get the guy.
You're saying he more spat in his general direction.
Exactly.
Not quite at him,
exactly.
Yeah.
Monty Python.
Python-esque.
So this is not, you know, on the spitting scale where who's at the top, Rudy Voller.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, it's you do it, it touches somebody, sorry, that's it, you're out six games, that's how it works. But yeah. I did think, oh, yeah, you didn't quite mean that in the way that it eventually turned out.
I did notice in his apology on the West Ham website that he apologised to pretty much everyone apart from Nick Powell, at who he spat. And it's worth noting, Nick Powell was absolutely outstanding in that game, the best player on the field by a considerable distance. Which was kind of nice to see after his bad time he had at Manchester United.
Is it worth having a discussion? Like, if you personally feel, as an individual, that spitting is the lowest of the low, then I'm not going to sit here and say that you're wrong if you feel that way, that's fine. But in terms of, like, real-world consequences, almost breaking someone's ankle in a World Cup year, I think, is kind of worse than spitting on someone.
I think racist, homophobic language is worse as well.
Yeah.
The question goes is, do you have to decide what's worse? You know, do we have to have a table of things we don't like? I mean, I probably would rather one of you spat at me than punch me in the face right now, but basically I don't want either to happen.
The ideal,
you know,
thing would be none of them.
I think it's just the fact that the default punishment is six for spitting. It's nothing else. Mm. If you get done for sent offs being six game punishment, that's it. Whereas, you know, there's variables on everything else.
So should we then say two-footed challenge, or what Joe Bennett did, that should be six games as well?
Yes.
That's one of the arguments that people are making. But then the thing about that is that that's why I find the Masuaku incident interesting, if my interpretation of it is right. Because the thing about two-footed challenges is, oh, well, it might be that they went for one and the second leg came out, or blah, 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 slightly over. So there's shades of grey, whereas with spitting, it's always like, yeah, he did it, therefore.
Shades of green, I guess.
I did see the line of spitting being football's greatest sin, to which I would reply that you've not paid much attention to football the last couple of decades.
Well done to West Brom, who won at Liverpool. Two defeats in a row for Klopp, away at Swansea, at home to West Brom after they beat City. Can anyone put their finger on why?
What was quite interesting is that Liverpool's defensive mistakes, like Klopp has gone all out on the defence afterwards. He says, you know, there was no, you know, I can't remember quite what the specific quote is, but these mistakes do not happen, you know, as far as he can say. Well, mate, they do quite regularly in your team, but they're all from open play as well. You know, none at the end. Usually it's like Liverpool can't defend set pieces and stuff, but that first goal, which is a beautiful goal, it's like the two strikers send the central defenders for a loop. Van Dijk is like looking at the man with the ball, sees the runner off his shoulder and goes with him, and it's the space where Matip is already behind the play. West Brom outplayed them basically in the attacking third, and probably, you know, well, the VAR stuff was sort of marginal on the third goal, but they could have had more.
Matip says, look, we started in front, our offensive play was okay, but in the defence we had problems. A mistake like my one kill every team. This mistake cannot happen. I have to clear the ball. I mean, he's right about that, isn't it? It was not the place to execute a little back heel.
I was under the impression that upon signing Virgil van Dijk, Liverpool were never, ever going to concede a goal again. That's certainly the impression I got from their supporters in the wake of that signing. So I'm surprised they have lost two games in a row.
So Breda Hangeland, who knows a thing or two about playing centre-half in the Premier League, made a point earlier in the season that it's not really a matter of personnel. I mean, the Matip back heel is obviously a individual error, but the way Liverpool are set up in terms of who their holding midfielder is, in this case Emre Can, not exactly sort of a human tractor in front of the defence there, I don't think. And because Klopp allows both fullbacks to go forward at the same time quite often, the centre-halves often find themselves just outnumbered. And he wrote an interesting piece in Norway making the point that from the point of view of a defender, you're always going to have a problem then if you don't have cover in front of you.
And West Brom were playing two men up front as well. So, you know, it's even more, you know, it's not... There's even more numbers to deal with than they're accustomed to.
Darren says, could the owners at Liverpool have enough of Klopp's failure in understanding defending set pieces, he writes, I guess an open play as well, thus replacing him for the obsessive attention to detail that Rafa Benitez provides?
It's, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, Rafa won the trophy. I don't think the histrionics, as Barry's already mentioned, the histrionics of football fans, particularly on social media, is quite something. And watching them go, Liverpool fans go from divine ecstasy and beating Manchester City to, I've never seen something so disgraceful as losing 1-0 away to Swansea. It's quite funny to watch, but you know, come on, the attacking football that Klopp has brought to this team is probably the best they've ever played. I mean, and it is superlative to watch.
Ever played?
Oh, okay. In the Premier
League, what's your Twitter handle?
In the Premier League era, I'll be confident saying that.
Okay, now that's probably fair.
Also, they're fourth in the league. They're just a handful of points behind Chelsea and Man United. You know, if you look at the teams they're up against, I don't think they're having a terrible season, really, in terms of what they can reasonably expect from the team. I think they're doing all right. I think if you're a Liverpool fan and you think this is some sort of nadir, then yeah. I don't know. You've not been paying attention for the last 10 years.
One quick thing, Jay Rodriguez. Great goal.
Absolutely.
Great to see him back playing. You know, he has got the skill set that I think, you know, can make him a proper Premier League finisher. Pochettino likes him a lot. I think it's quite, you know, he's the sort of person that you could see replacing Harry Kane on the odd day when he's a bit tired.
I think he has a touch of the, I've said it before, he has a touch of the Canes about him. Similar sort of style of footballer. VAR, Barry. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wonderful. I'm loving VAR. The thing is, people are saying we have to give it a chance. It needs tweaks. Decisions need to be made quicker. The fans need to be kept in the loop. That's fine. But it did reduce the first half of this game to absolute farce. Alan Pardew speculated that it might have contributed to two of his players going off with hamstring injuries, all the standing around. Not sure I agree with that, but it possibly has a point. And
what do they do at half time, do you think? Just skip? It's quite a long break, that, isn't it?
But the thing is, even if they do iron out the obvious flaws at the moment, I can, you know, we're still talking about it. It was supposed to rule out controversy, you know, it's just creating more and more. And say they iron out the current flaws, managers are going to call for it to be used for more and more and more decisions, you know. At the moment, it's sort of used for major game-changing calls, but any call can be a major game-changing call, and I don't think people will be happy until every little decision is being referred upstairs. One other thing as well, the Salah penalty award, as well as taking a long time, it was suggested to the referee by Mo Salah. He's not allowed to do that. So, you know, it's a nonsense. And also, we'll get to it in my Serie A Piazza later. Milan had a goal awarded over the weekend that shouldn't have been, and it was missed by VAR, a clear handball into the back of the net. That should have been picked up by the fourth official, but wasn't.
Well, I'm enjoying it.
I agree with Barry. I think there's another grey area thing that's gonna be pushed at by everybody who wants to get decisions in there. Well, you know, feels a sense of injustice. I spoke to Howard Webb the other week, who's been rolling this out in the MLS
for work or just a chat.
Just for a chat. Okay. You know, I felt lonely one night. Gave him a call. He was very accommodating.
If you were going to call a ref for a chat, if you were feeling lonely, who would you go?
Dermot Gallagher.
Lars?
I'd want to have a chat with Clattenburg to find out how the whole Saudi experience is working out for him, because that's a mystifying thing.
I'd WhatsApp. Contact. I'd FaceTime Tats. Jeff Winter, frankly. Anyway.
So, thanks. Thanks, Max.
It's okay.
He basically was like, this has worked very well. And he sort of exuded a sort of sense of calm and control over it. And he's like, if referees start avoiding the big decisions and start going to VAR, which is the sense of what you got was going on at the West Brom-Liverpool match, then they will get called into the referee's assessor's office and told to sort it out. And I think there's also a thing about these, you know, the Salah point. These people are going to have to start getting booked. There are sort of, they do have a scheme for it, which is intended to sort of contain how it happens and how often it happens. But you can also believe that that system might not actually ultimately work in the pressure cooker of a big game environment.
There's also a problem, isn't there, with offsides, in that if offside isn't given and then it turns out it is offside, VAR seems to get involved. if the linesman raises his flag and the ref blows, and then it turns out it wasn't offside, well, that's tough. And that, I mean, that seems ridiculous. I mean, that does seem completely... I'm not a dinosaur like Barry, and I think VAR will work, but that is ridiculous.
It also... It also kind of dilutes the sort of shared joy of scoring a goal. I mean, football is a very low scoring game. So if you're a massive football fan, like celebrating your team score a goal, either in the stadium or in your down the pub or in your sitting room, is one of the sort of biggest sort of emotional highs of your week, probably. And now because we know there's an extra check being put on it, if it looks even vaguely controversial, you can't just sort of lose yourself in the moment. You just have to sit and watch and see, was this actually a goal or not? And you can. That's just true to an extent with disallowed goals, but that happens instantaneously. So, but I don't like how it kind of dilutes the emotional experience of a goal going in.
You're absolutely right. Apparently, in Portugal, where they've been practicing it, you know, you don't effectively have two goal celebrations.
And that for me is the thing I can't see myself getting over, because like the stoppages, I think they'll iron that out when everyone gets better at it. All the other weirdness, I think a lot of that we can learn to live with. But the idea that goals are not just goals in the same way anymore, I think is something that's gonna have a hard time getting past, to be honest.
We need that team who did the sort of fishing celebration to do a celebration where the players make a sofa and then they sit there waiting for the VAR and then they celebrate again. Also yesterday, Chelsea beat Newcastle 3-0. Pretty humdrum game, wasn't it? Anyone have anything?
It's interesting to see Batshuayi playing quite well now that it seems like he's on his way out. Like both against Brighton and here, I think he's played well. I think the Chelsea attack has looked more fluent and more vibrant with him there because he moves around a lot and he's a good sort of reference point for them. But he looks like he might be on his way. And I'm fairly convinced he's actually a really good player. It's just never worked out for him at Chelsea. And I think if he, for instance, goes to Dortmund or something, he's going to score an absolute bunch of goals.
Yeah.
But he's scored 10 goals this season without having that many opportunities. You know, his goal per, I think it's about a goal a game he's averaging. And everyone says that Antonio Conte doesn't rate him, and I don't understand why Antonio Conte doesn't rate him.
I think it's something to do with work rate. It's a bit of a Daniel Sturridge thing, I think. He doesn't put himself around enough in that striker. And, you know, I quite like Conte for his my way or the highway approach. You know, he's so single-minded, it's to the point of obsession. And you see, you know, in that game, Zappa Costa and Alonso, two very much sort of fit the Conte model, had great games. Alonso in particular was the decisive factor. And but it's been clear from day one he doesn't trust Batshuayi. And nothing he will do seems to be able to change that.
I think he's very specific, Conte, in terms of tactics and what players are meant to do on the pitch. They have very, very specific instructions, and he seems to like target men who are good at playing others in and playing back to goal and stuff like this. Wherever he's been, he's favoured strikers like this. Batshuayi obviously is a little bit different, but you wonder from Chelsea's perspective then, since everyone seems convinced that Conte's probably going in the summer anyway, and you have a striker there who's potentially very good but who Conte doesn't like, maybe you don't sell him? Maybe you just loan him out for half a season?
Well, I think that's what they're going to do, isn't it? They're going to loan him out.
Do we know which old tall man they're going to get? No further. The peak excitement of Peter Crouch, Andy Carroll, Ashley Barnes seems to have gone a bit quiet.
Yeah. It still looks like the best bet is Dzeko if they can resolve the...
But the problem with that is, producer Jonathan informed me before we began, that Roma's sort of reserve lanky man has been injured over the weekend, which... could possibly put the mockers on any potential.
Is that his name, Reserve Lanky Man?
I think it's Schick. It's Patrick Schick.
Schick.
Reserve Lanky Man is now knacked, which could knack a potential Dzeko move to Stamford Bridge.
I thought Charlotte Mioby looked all right for Notts County. I mean, that could be a thing.
And that's it. Or John Stead.
Yeah. We'll start with them in part two in just a sec. Hello, it's part two of Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start then with Notts County. Good result for them against Swansea. And we just touched on that at the end of part one. I think John Stead and Shola Amiobi may be my favourite strike partnership currently in football, Baz.
Well, it was, you know, great. Nicky Hunt in that team as well. So a lot of Premier League past represented Alan Smith on the bench, Kevin Nolan in the technical area.
We just needed Serge from Kasabian in midfield. Naughty's lineup.
That was John Stead's sixth goal in six games. And it's not like he got two in one and then a gap, like one goal in each of his past six games. So he's very much a man in form for, you know, he's 34 years old, been around for donkey's years. And Notts County were very poor in the first half of that game and outstanding in the second, which suggested they got a rocket from Kevin Nolan during the break. And I wouldn't, you know, I don't give Newport a prayer of beating Spurs at Wembley, but I would quite fancy Notts County to do a number on Swansea in the replay of this.
They just don't want, you know, Swansea, and you mentioned Huddersfield as well, you know, drawing at home to Birmingham, you just do not want a replay. It's just like the worst. Exactly. It's better to lose.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, Carvajal said it was not the end of the world to go out. But he, you know, he
did someone tell him he didn't actually lose? He's still in it.
But I think that's throwing it forward. But, you know, he did at least, you know, he made eight changes, but he also tried a back three. He gave Sanchez a game in the centre midfield. In fact, Sanchez was probably one of their better performers. So there's some sort of positives for them in that game. But yeah, I mean, you just don't want to replay.
There were boos for David Wagner after the Huddersfield game. That seems a little bit harsh.
Right, very harsh. But before we move on from that, I mean, it's probably been said before, but it's great seeing Kevin Nolan, unlike other ex-top professionals, he's, instead of sort of hanging around complaining about not walking into a Premier League job, he's gone further down the league and is making his reputation doing really good work with the actual management. I think that is the way to go.
Well, do you know what? I kind of agree and I kind of don't. I think if you get offered a top job, you might as well take it, because if you're... like, sure. Look at Sheringham. He went to Stevenage and he wasn't successful, and that's sort of it, isn't it? That no one higher than Stevenage is going to go, well, I'll give you a go. We don't know what it was like behind the scenes at Stevenage, how good a coach he is, whatever. We just don't know those
things. I'm not begrudging anyone taking the top jobs if offered. I'm perhaps more sceptical of the clubs offering them.
Right. And also, a lot of these players seem to think that taking a job like the Notts County one is beneath them. That's what I have the problem with. Mm. You know, if you get offered a big job, by all means, take it. But don't turn your nose up at Notts County or Stevenage or whoever, you know.
It's a lot of the big names who are on the sort of big name manager merry-go-rounds have at some point made their name at quite a humble club to begin with. You know, it's not, you know, people always cite, you know, when a top X player gets a job and people say, oh, this is terrible, and it's like, ah, but Bart Guardiola, you know, Guardiola went straight in and that worked. But, you know, there, if you look at guys like even Ancelotti and Conte and guys like this have been at least Serie A clubs in Italy.
Guardiola was a Barcelona B coach.
Yeah, exactly.
So he did play in the...
But it could be argued as well that this Notts County job could be the hardest job Kevin Nolan will ever have. You know, a club with no money.
He once had to do a four-hour radio show with me. So.
Okay. players who aren't particularly good, you know, operating on a shoestring budget, and he's doing very well at it. The further up he goes, the more money he'll have, the better players he'll have. Obviously, the pressure will increase. But it's as good a place to learn as any, you would say, and he can only come out of it as a better manager.
Well done to Coventry, who won at MK Dons and took a lot of fans with them as well, didn't they?
So, I think I heard that Cov had more fans at MK Dons than MK Dons had. So they took over 8,000, which is wonderful. These fans, their average attendance at the Ricoh Arena, I think, is about between 4 and 7. And these fans are happy to travel because they're not giving money to Sisu, the horrible hedge fund that own Coventry.
And well done to Rochdale as well, who drew at Millwall, who needed a last-minute equaliser. This Tim Cahill to Millwall rumour, I think Nottingham Forest might be interested as well, but there's something great about the idea of Tim Cahill going back to Millwall, isn't there?
I mean, basically, as long as he can stand, he could probably do a job.
Jump.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's his role now. It's just to head the ball until... Well, he wasn't getting a game in the A-League because Ross McCormack is also at Melbourne City. I think it's Melbourne City. So he had to go somewhere to get game time to get in the World Cup squad. And I kind of thought, actually, he'll be in the World Cup squad regardless of what he does in the next 6 months. He's such a sort of talisman for Australia.
He could go to Chelsea.
We could go to Chelsea, couldn't we? Absolutely right. Why not? And that will be the rumour that in 4 hours' time, Niles will be like, Tim Cahill to Chelsea.
If he goes to Millwall, who will sponsor his goal celebrations?
That's a very good question.
Not Lewisham Council, you'd imagine. Maybe Barney. Barney Roan.
And he would have to do what the Barney top hat would be his celebration, would he, that he could Instagram. Nottingham Forest lost to Hull. Which was great reward for beating Arsenal in the last round. And breaking news is that Arsenal have agreed a £55.5 million deal for Aubameyang, £180,000 a week. It'll only happen if Dortmund can find a replacement. Is that right, producer Jonathan? That is right. Yes, Paul McInnes.
Can I ask a question about that? Does Aubameyang play as a straightforward number nine?
He can play out wide as well, but he's not as effective. I mean, he should play as a straight number nine.
That's so you're spending £100 million on two players competing for the same position in
that
two windows.
That would seem to be the case, yes.
Is there any case for Lacazette and Aubameyang playing together?
I think they're a bit similar. They're both kind of poachers, so it would be a bit of a surprise. It would be interesting. I mean, them two playing together with Ozil providing through balls is a potentially sexy idea, but... It doesn't seem like the smartest thing, but you can also put him out wide, but I don't think he's happy or comfortable there particularly. So
3-5-2 with Mkhitaryan and Ozil. Nah, I don't believe it.
It'd be weird.
It sounds banterera to me.
So this is the end for Lacazette, is it?
I mean, I'd say it's the end for Giroud.
It's the end for Giroud. I'd already cast him aside.
Couldn't
I'd send him to Chelsea.
Couldn't he go the other way? Why not? Couldn't he go to Dortmund? Because he needs game time to get in the France World Cup squad.
The theory is that he doesn't want to leave London.
Doesn't want to leave London or Mrs. Giroud?
Indeed.
But Mademoiselle Giroud, who I think may have her husband over a barrel because of previous indiscretions.
Producer Jonathan says there is a Giroud to Chelsea, Batshuayi to Dortmund, Aubameyang to Arsenal triangle.
Okay.
Perfect symmetry.
I certainly think, I mean, Giroud has an appeal for Arsenal that maybe, like I said, doesn't, in the sense that he is a very tangible plan B, the infamous plan B, because you can change the flow of the game a little bit by having a big man in the area you can hit it to if you're not getting anywhere. So, I mean, having him off the bench...
And we know Arsene Wenger likes to knock it long.
I haven't seen a lot of Arsenal this season, but it does feel to me like Lacazette's getting a bit of a raw deal there.
I agree.
I think he's very good. I don't think it's been... I mean, I think he's a good striker. He's a good finisher. He's not been getting great service.
Hardly got to play with Sanchez and Ozil at all.
No, I think it's strange.
I think you're right.
Maybe he'll find a way. Maybe it'll be sort of like a YOLO sort of 4-4-2 thing with just two midfielders and then sort of Ozil and Mkhitaryan.
Coquelin just thought, no, he's gone.
He's gone around. With Ozil and Mkhitaryan just kind of doing whatever they want and those two up front. I mean, they would lose many games.
I hope
5-3, I think.
In his press conferences, Arsene Wenger just then said YOLO to every question. This is all happening because Alexis Sanchez has gone to Manchester United, who was good, wasn't he, as they won 4-0 at Yeovil. Lovely goal from Herrera as well. How well did Sanchez do?
I mean, he looked like a world-class player playing at Hewish Park. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that's indicative of exactly what's going to happen every week, because they look pretty free-flowing to me, which is not what you commonly experience with a Jose Mourinho side.
Are you surprised about his contract extension, Jose?
Not particularly, no. I don't think he'll see it out, but I'm not surprised he's been offered one and signed one. It was his birthday as well on Friday, 55.
Many happy returns to Jose.
Rory Smith did a tweet after when the sort of rumours were coming out, like just kind of clipping every single news story from all his previous clubs, when it's like, Jose agrees contract extension, he's going to be around for it, and then, you know, leaves 9 months later.
Well, it is an interesting thing that wherever Mourinho goes, he seems to inspire this sort of rabid sort of cult-like loyalty from certain sections of the fans of the clubs. I wonder if it's to do with his methods and the way he communicates and stuff. But it's about Mourinho, before we leave it, things are going quite well at United. Like, I think all things considered, they're not having a bad season. City being what they are, you can't really expect them to catch them right now, maybe. But it's interesting. I have a quote from Mourinho, which I love, which is, I says, I am the same, physically the same, but every day you have to think about yourself and about evolution. I have the same nature, but I'm much more mature with a different approach to things. I'm more ready to be in a club and stay for a long time. That's what Mourinho says. Problem is, he said it in 2013 when he went back to Chelsea. So you always wonder with him when the next explosion is going to come and when he's suddenly just going to...
That was the happy one, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was the happy one. So to what extent a Leopard can actually change his spots and can go through many, many years at a club without annoying and alienating everyone around him. I mean, it would be great for Man United and him if he could do that, but I find it really hard to trust it, even though there's no evidence at the moment that anything is going wrong in particular, you know?
What I'd like to see from United going forward with Sanchez in the team is Marcus Rashford playing number nine. That's what I'd like to see more of.
Instead of Lukaku?
I mean, in some occasions, yes. I thought it wasn't much of, but the way he took that goal on Friday was quite cheeky. I liked it. I'd like to see him sort of see what happens if he gets on the end of all that.
Much has been made of the fact that Jose Mourinho has given Alexis a locker room spot at the training ground between Marcus Rashford and Jesse Lingard, presumably in the hope that some of his greatness will, you know, rub off on them and help them grow and mature as players.
Who's your locker next to at The Guardian?
I don't know. It's right beside where Paul McInnes sits, though. So
similar inference can be drawn, I think.
Do you sometimes open it and there's like, he's done something hilarious, cut up your trainers or something?
Well, to be honest, the only thing in it is a Carabao box.
Hey, what else do you need?
I only open it, you know, about once every 3 weeks, and then what is it, March, I won't open it again ever until I get next year's Carabao box.
Also through Brighton, very lucky goal from Glenn Murray, win at Borough. Both the Sheffield clubs are in. Leicester City and Southampton, Javi Gracia losing his first game for Watford. The fifth round draw is on the One Show tonight.
Is it between
one,
the feature on windmills and...
I think so, yes. They're sending Bill Oddy to do something serious about, you know...
Voles,
yeah. And then Giles Brandreth is doing the draw alongside Whoopi Goldberg, I imagine. And they'll get fans from each side to shake hands and sit on a... You look confused, Lars.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the One Show?
No.
Give it a try.
That would be why, then.
Totally remarkable bit of television. Liverpool, Arsenal are out then. City, United, Chelsea and Spurs are still in it. Who's going to win the FA Cup?
I mean, the way it's going, you've got to say Manchester City are going to make a... I mean, I think the domestic treble is very much on.
I hope Coventry win it again. Another surprise Coventry Cup win.
In an almost anniversary of 1987. Lars, do you have any thoughts?
It would be really fun if Man United won it after a superbly ill-tempered Manchester derby in the final where everyone gets really annoyed with each other. That would be great fun.
Oh, excellent. And there's VAR, and it takes hours.
Just chaos.
It goes on for like 3 days. In the Football League, wins for Wolves, 12 points clear now. Norwich, Bristol City, and a 3-1 win for Fulham at Barnsley, including two for Ryan Sessegnon. He's got 11 goals so far this season, the most for any teenager in the top 13 leagues in Europe. Isn't that good? Thanks to @scoutedfootball who found that. He's 17. It's not fair, is it?
He's 17. He seems to have been around for a long, long time.
That's the start of it. He's like Doogie Howser, isn't he?
It's interesting why nobody's bought him yet.
I'm just convinced Spurs are going to buy him. I don't know why.
He does seem a very
Spurs
player.
Such a Spurs signing. But didn't he make a very conscious decision not to go anywhere in the summer? Because at Fulham he'll actually play, which is not a bad thing for development, I think.
But you also would have thought somebody would have just made it a non-decision for Fulham and just gone, bang, there's the money. We'll loan him back for 18 months.
I'm not comparing them because that would be silly, but it is interesting that he's a sort of absurdly talented left back who's so good going forward. They've just moved him up on the wing. And he's got a number 3 and he might end up at Spurs. That's kind of interesting. I'm just saying.
Do you want the top 7 teenagers' goals? Most league goals scored by players under the age of 21 so far this season. Sessegnon is top.
Leon Bailey.
Leon Bailey is in joint 4th.
Oh, apologies.
Above him,
it's very good though.
Kieran Dowell and Kylian Mbappe. And alongside Leon Bailey, Malcolm... David Neres and Gabriel Jesus. There you go. And also in the Championship, Darren Bent's joined Burton on loan. That's where Darren Bent is. In League One, with the leaders in cup action, Wigan, Shrewsbury's win at Portsmouth took them 2 points away from the leaders. Blackburn are third. They were held at home by Northampton. Interestingly, Bradford in 5th have lost 4 in a row. Saturday, they lost 4-0 at home to AFC Wimbledon.
Big win for the Dons, that.
Yeah. And in League Two, Luton are 9 points clear after a 1-0 win at Grimsby. They had a man sent off after 33 minutes when the score was 0-0, so they did very well. Notts County still second. Mansfield are third. Haven't lost in the league since the start of December. And Barnet, 4 points adrift at the bottom. They drew at Cheltenham. That'll do for this bit. In a second, we'll round up Europe and look ahead to the Premier League fixtures on Tuesday and Wednesday night. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly. This part three, if you want to call it that. In Spain, Barcelona still top. 2-1 win over Alaves, a Suarez volley, and a classic Messi free kick. John Guidetti, who scored for Alaves, also wants the introduction of VAR. He clearly hasn't seen how it's been working elsewhere. There was a handball from a volley, which was basically point-blank range. He didn't get the penalty, and he probably shouldn't have done. Antoine Griezmann was back in the goals, 3-3 now. Atletico beats Las Palmas 3-0. And Real Madrid won 4-1 at Valencia on what like a beautiful sunny day. Two penalties for Ronaldo. Karim Benzema looking very, very angry when he got substituted. In Germany, the leaders, Bayern Munich. That was a fun game, wasn't it, Lars, against Hoffenheim?
It was really interesting because as pod listeners may or may not know, Hoffenheim is managed by boy wonder Julian Nagelsmann. I mean, you made a Doogie Howser reference earlier. I mean, he's proper Doogie Howser territory. He's about 5 years old. He's done a really good job as the manager of Hoffenheim, and he has been mentioned as a possible future manager for Bayern Munich because, of course, Jupp Heynckes would quite like to retire, I think, if it was up to him. So this is an interesting game because they haven't really followed up on their amazing last season, Hoffenheim. They've been struggling a little bit, but I'm sure Nagelsmann would have wanted to prove his mettle away to Munich against his potential employers, future employers. And it started amazing for them. They went 2-0 up, which is pretty good. But then
and missed a penalty.
Yes. And then it all went spectacularly wrong, and Bayern Munich came back in 1-5-2. And the way the game went, if you look at the stats, they only had 4 shots on goal all game, Hoffenheim, and Bayern had 22 attempts, of which 11 were on goal. So it wasn't an unfair result, really, but it was a really intriguing game.
Interesting as well, Serge Gnabry, who is on loan from Bayern but playing for Hoffenheim and played. They don't have that rule where you don't play against your parent club.
He then intriguingly missed a penalty in the third minute. No, I'm not suggesting anything because I think that is actually completely fine, especially if it's a short-term loan, then I guess it can be weird. But if it's a long-term loan, you just sort of put yourself in the mind, I'm playing for this club for a year. So this whole playing against your parent club thing, I don't see how that is a problem, really. It was a fun game. And just as Bayern were fun playing Werder Bremen and having more trouble than the Oyot have had last weekend. I mean, Bayern are kind of a fun team to watch at the moment.
But they are, 16 points clear or something now?
Yeah, I mean, that's the less fun part. But looking at the Bundesliga, it's worth following because the race behind Bayern is just completely bonkers. You've got you've got 3 points separating Gladbach in seventh with Leverkusen in second. So the sort of race for the Champions League space is going to be so much fun going forward.
And at the bottom, a late equaliser denied Cologne a fourth successive win. They had to settle for a 1-1 draw at home to Augsburg.
Which, given that they had no wins four games ago, is pretty crazy. They had no wins in 16, and now they've won 3 out of 4 since that. So the Cologne revival is happening. And intrigued to see Hamburg pick up a point as disciple of Felix Magath. Bernd Hollerbach had his first game there. I don't think many expect him to do well, but they got a point away against Leipzig, so well done to them.
From Lars's German Rathaus to Barry's Italian piazza.
Yeah, Dries Mertens scored twice as Napoli beat Bologna 3-1 to maintain their 1-point lead over Juventus at the top of the table. Juve beat Chievo. It was a tough game for them until Chievo completely shot themselves in the foot. They had Samuel Bastian sent off in the first half, and then the second half, Fabrizio Cacciatore. I've been taking lessons from Paolo. He went to ground looking for a penalty on one of Chievo's rare attacks. Didn't get one, stayed down, and Juve won a corner at the opposite end of the pitch. He was finally allowed to receive treatment, as is dictated by the rules. Then you have to leave the pitch and come back on, but he didn't want to because Juve were about to take a corner and his team were already down to 10 men. So the ref insisted he go, and as he trotted to the sideline, he did the handcuffs sign to fans, to suggest there was match fixing going on, standing at the sideline waiting to come back on. He did it again behind his back and got a straight red card for his troubles.
I love that from the ref. That's amazing. Yeah. Just none of this nonsense.
People might remember Jose Mourinho was fined $35,000 when he was Inter manager for doing the same thing during a match against Sampdoria. Inter drew their fourth game in a row after conceding a very soft late equaliser from a free kick against Spal. Milan are really on the upsurge and beat Lazio 2-1. With the help of that goal I told you about earlier, Patrick Cutrone scored their opener. I said clearly earlier, it wasn't clear. It looked like he'd headed the ball in, but it went in off his forearm, and the VAR official didn't notice it, and the goal was allowed to stand. Reno Gattuso.
Can't get everything, can you? You know.
Reno Gattuso, Milan's manager, even admitted afterwards that they were lucky that the goal shouldn't have stood. But and towards the bottom of the table, Verona beat Fiorentina 4-1 in Florence. Moise Keane was among the goals. First player ever born in the 2000s to make an appearance in one of Europe's top five leagues. He's on loan from Juventus. And it was with Juventus he made that appearance. First to make an appearance in the Champions League and first to score in one of Europe's top five leagues. So, yeah, that'll make you feel good and old.
Yeah.
At the top, it's Napoli, Juventus. Napoli lead by a point. Juve are 10 points clear. Lazio in third. And at the bottom, it's Spal, Verona and Benevento in 18th, 19th and 20th place.
If you want to continue the theme of feeling old, Monaco in France have signed Pietro Pellegrini from Genoa for $17.5 million. He's 16 years old. He became the first player born in the 2000s to score a brace in a major European League match. Only the second most expensive 16-year-old, though, after Vinicius Jr., who Real Madrid have signed on a pre-contract agreement for $38 million. He scored for Flamengo last week. The goal wasn't momentous because it was his first. It wasn't. It was momentous because the player who provided the assist was also 17. Both goal scorer and assist maker were born in the year 2000. Their cumulative years, less than, I think, any one of us in total.
Their cumulative years are 10 years fewer than my cumulative years.
Bastards. In Portugal, the Taça da Liga, which is the Portuguese League Cup final, got underway after the ball was delivered on a tiny little man in a tiny little, it looks like a C5. He's in a small little red motorised trolley, and then
it's like a bubble car.
He's got a helmet on, as producer Joe. He's going at 4 miles an hour, but health and safety. The ball is then laid out of the back like a tiny little sort of miniature chicken having an egg, you know, laying an egg. That's where they got the ball from. So that's really nice. And I strongly recommend all sides in the Premier League do that.
Did you see the Copa Libertadores clip from last week?
No.
A guy, I think he's playing for a Colombian side, and he, Medellin, I think, and he scores a goal. Then he runs off the pitch, and there's some sort of sponsors 4x4 sitting on the side.
Oh,
and
yes.
He gets in the car and sort of pretends to drive it for a minute. It's
that's a nice one.
More accessories on the pitch, please.
I should mention the actual game. Sporting, who are second in the top division, went on to beat Vitória Setúbal, who are second bottom on penalties, after Baz Dost. Great name. Got a late equalising penalty in normal time for Sporting. Full Premier League fixture list tomorrow and Wednesday.
Sir, could I just quickly hurtle back to my Italian piazza?
Absolutely.
I don't think I remember to say that Juventus ended up beating Chievo 2-0 in that game.
Minor details, Barry.
Gonzalo Higuain scored his first in six. So, you know, good for him to get off the mark again.
Well, from there, back to the Premier League. Tuesday's fixtures, Swansea-Arsenal. Swansea still bottom. Level on points with West Brom, though. 3 points from safety. West Ham Palace. 11th, West Ham Palace, 13th. But West Ham in 11th are still just 4 points above the relegation zone. And Huddersfield versus Liverpool, also Tuesday night. Liverpool 4th. So this crisis, you're right, this crisis of Liverpool. They're 4th and a win would take them level with Chelsea and perhaps more importantly 5 points clear of Spurs, Lars.
Yep. But I mean, I can understand. I mean, before these two defeats, they'd what something like one defeat in the last 24 games in all competitions or something. So it's not been a bad run for them, really. But you do, I understand the fans' frustration because they play really well most of the time, but you always feel that they have the sort of shambolic defeat in them. And that's probably very frustrating for Liverpool fans. But you'd expect them to get back on the horse, as it were, here, because Huddersfield are really not, you know, looked that great recently.
A game of Wednesday is presumably Spurs Manchester United at Wembley. Sanchez to score the winner, Baz?
You'd never know. Spurs haven't lost against Man U at home in their last five. You probably remember their last home game against Manchester United was also their last game at White Hart Lane. They won it 2-1. Mourinho man-marked Christian Eriksen in that game.
He did himself.
Did he? No, sorry. It was Axel Zoonbi. I really hope I have done his.
Zerbe, the guy who's at Villa.
Yeah. For an hour, anyway. But Eriksen still managed to provide two assists because you can't man mark him at corners and free kicks. But yeah, it should be a good game. And it'd be interesting to see if Mourinho adopts that tactic again.
There's quite a few. There's a couple of relegation 6-pointers as well. Stoke hosting Watford. Southampton against Brighton, and then you've got West Brom away at City, as well as Huddersfield playing Liverpool and Swansea playing Arsenal.
So. Is Everton-Leicester the first meaningless game of the season?
Yeah, it looks like it has that mid-table, yeah.
But good that Seamus Coleman's back in the squad. And you mentioned Southampton. Does anyone know anything about Guido Carrillo? They signed from Monaco.
He's a sort of big, strong type character, or he's meant to be a target man, of number nine guy who's strong, I think. I've not seen much of him, to be honest, as you can tell.
Well, that's more
but we just skipped over this. It's Guardiola versus Pardiola this Wednesday. How can you not be excited by that?
Oh, well, we were always going to... We haven't skipped over it, Lars. That was the crescendo. We were reaching. Why are you so excited about that?
It's just the smooth stylings of Alan Pardew going to the Etihad, I think, is an exciting prospect. And having just gotten a win at Liverpool, you know. Who knows?
Away from the Premier League, Vietnam lost 2-1 in the final of the AFC Under-23 Championship to Uzbekistan. The first time a Vietnamese team has got to the final of a competition of any age range. We mentioned it in the last pod. They beat Australia in the groups and Iraq and Qatar. Basically, the crowds, I mean, basically the whole of Vietnam seemed to go out to watch them and be out in the streets. Quite extraordinary. It almost didn't happen because of the coldest recorded weather in Changzhou in eastern China, which is where the game was. The coldest weather there since 1986. Feedback corner and questions time. Alabaster says, I can't get my head around someone who's never had a cup of tea. Simon Burtonton has never had a cup of tea. He said, was it Sean Ingle who'd never had a kebab? It was. Simon got quite a bit of Twitter shock and abuse for not having a cup of tea.
He got abused.
Well, not really, but here was Simon's response. Simon says, two people want a drink and go to a tap. I fill my glass with water and I am happy. The other person heats his water, then soaks the dried leaves of an Asian bush in it, then tops it up with milk of a cow. And after all that, he thinks I am the weird one. He's
fair
right.
Point.
T-San says, curious as to why Philippe Auclair didn't even earn an honourable mention as the potential bad boy of the pod. Yeah, possible. Joe says, has Barry ever appeared on Sunday Supplement?
No.
Would he?
Well, I would miss our radio show.
Yeah, you would.
So, no.
Lewis says, what breakfast would they need to offer on Sunday Supplement to get both Lars and Barry on the show?
I
liquid one.
Couldn't see myself ever being invited on Sunday Supplement, to be honest. I'm not senior enough.
You're not, are you? I would watch and wonder why you weren't sitting next to me.
Goes without saying, me neither.
We were talking last week about Arsenal players who can play musical instruments after Alexis Sanchez was on the piano with his announcement at going to Manchester United. Person from the world says, Thomas Rosicky can play lead guitar. Gilberto Silva is a keen mandolin player. No bassists to be found. He says, I can think of a few better metaphors for Arsenal than a decent band lacking the essential balance provided by a bass player. He then adds, obviously, Nobby Solano could play the trumpet, Leighton Baines on the guitar, Mario Balotelli plays the piano, and Dion Dublin invented, obviously, the jube. And then he sent a YouTube clip of Stevie Wonder playing the jube at a trade fair in America somewhere, which is a nice watch.
Who do you think would be good at playing musical instruments, regardless of whether or not they do it? Like, I can imagine Per Mertesacker being handy with a trombone.
Just Louise on a bongo.
Louise on a bongo.
Oh, for sure.
Neil Warnock, accordion. Ram says, just finished listening to Mondays. It was going so well, but I'm left with the horrendous image of 20 chicken-sized Barrys in spandex. Nightmare fuel. And finally, a sincere message, which I don't really read them out very much, but JC Wirtz, you saw this, Barry, below the line, saying thank you to the Football Weekly team. My dad passed away 2 weeks ago. Since then, life has been a blur, but your banter provided refuge from the overwhelming seriousness of the situation, helped me reboot. For that, I'm thankful. Keep up the good work. John Wirtz in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin. We wish you all the best. And, you know, useful that we actually do something useful for at least one person. Well, thank you for your time, Barry.
And you're welcome.
Thank you, Lars.
All good.
Are you praying, Paul?
He is.
I'm just trying to hold myself together. When we get into the second hour of the podcast, my concentration completely...
Oh, no, we're done. We're totally done now.
Phew. Thank you so much for having me.
No, total pleasure. Come again.
I will.
Okay, we'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.